you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I mean, you guys are the best team in Chicago. Everybody knows that. We all know that the afternoon show is not afraid of anything, really. Yeah. But
afternoons on the Score.
Gilgeous Alexander driving in the lane with his spit on Kobe. Inside feed to Giddey with the right hand and layup. It's 108-107 Bulls with 14.8 left timeout. Bulls, my goodness.
And goes left quarter Baisley. Open three, way off the mark. Rebound, Javonte Green. From behind, the ball poked from behind it, stolen by Kendrick Williams. And a three, way off the mark. Offensive putback good with a flip with the right hand by Giddey.
That's a tough one, yeah, right there. Is. Great rebound by Javonte, but he brought it down around his waist.
93-85, Thunder.
Highlights courtesy of Right Here, Baby, on the Score and the Bulls Radio Network. In 2022-23, Josh Giddey of the Oklahoma City Thunder averaged 16.6 points per game, almost 8 rebounds per game, and more than 6 assists per game at the age of 20 in the NBA. All of the numbers went down a little bit. 12-6-4 last year for Oklahoma City as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander stepped up and became an MVP candidate. The Thunder faltered in the playoffs. Josh Giddey fell out of the rotation, and now extension eligible, the Thunder have given up on a 21-year-old playmaker and traded him to the Bulls for Alex Caruso. Let's discuss with our guy Joe Cowley from the Chicago Sun-Times. He joins us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. What do you make of this trade, Joe? Thanks for the time on a breaking news day.
I love it if the plan is to make sure that you have that 25 draft pick, because that's what kind of deal this feels like. It feels like you're going to take a step back, whether it's done purposely or it's done because of finances, and you are going to hope that this young developmental player can cover up the holes that were exposed, especially in that Dallas series that cost him a rotation, like you said. And if it takes a year to do that and you're not a very good team and you ensure yourself of that 25 draft pick, I'm okay with it if that's the plan.
The details on the 25 Bull, you're talking about the Bulls draft pick, the Portland pick that is protected?
I'm talking about the San Antonio, the top 10 protected that goes to the Spurs. They need to do whatever it takes to make sure they keep that pick. If you are making sure that you are a top 10 team and keeping that pick and then, you know, shoving it to 26 or 27, where I think it goes to 14 protected, then I'm all about it, because then you got a young guy who's still 21, who, you know, financially, who knows what you could do with him because of the way his season ended at OKC. I'm guessing it's going to be Bulls business as basketball as usual, where they let him go to the market, see what the market sets a price on, and then decide to match or not. And if that makes you take a step backwards to ensure you keep that 25 draft pick, I'm all for it. It's a gamble, because to me, when you keep Alex Caruso, you keep a guy around that culturally is all about winning. It doesn't mean that that's what happened with him there, but that's his mindset. And so that kind of automatically seems to always push you out of that top 10. So, you can't, if this is the direction you're going, you have to have that 25 draft pick. That's how strongly I believe in this class, and a lot of other teams believe in this class. And sources have told me in the Bulls that as much as they dangled out there, there were multiple picks, but it was all 24. There was not one 25 first round pick offered, no matter what the player that was dangled out there at the trade deadline. So people are holding on to those for a reason.
So the 2025 draft believed to be a lot better than 2024. The Bulls draft pick,
yes.
If they pick between 1 and 10, they get to keep it and own it. If it drops down to between 11 and 30, it goes to the San Antonio Spurs. So all around right. The league, Ryan, teams are prioritizing keeping the picks in next year's draft. That means a tank season for the Chicago Bulls?
Well, that explains a little bit more than why you're getting giddy and rather than dumping Caruso for a bunch of high picks, because if Joe, you're telling us that teams aren't sitting there. I mean, Oklahoma City has a ton of picks, but they're not floating 25 because everyone is so high on the class. That makes more sense to take a somewhat of a risk, higher reward player in return for a guy like Caruso, correct?
Yeah, and if it takes a year step back,
right?
Because you don't know what's going to happen with Lonzo Ball. Although this kind of tells me that as much as Lonzo is tweeting out and showing his workouts, that medically the Bulls kind of know that this is still a big, big time long shot. Lonzo Ball has a lot of money on the line that he has to make sure. You know, he can collect fully, and also, you know, he's going to be a free agent after next season. He has to show something to get that next contract. So, of course, he's going to be overly optimistic about where he is. Both sides, though. Ball side, the Bulls side, I've talked to multiple people. He has not played 5-on-5 live scrimmage with full physicality, and that's still not going to happen until August. So this kind of tells me that, look, we don't have a playmaker. You know, Kobe White did some amazing things, but at the end of the day, you still need a playmaking, push the ball up the court, kind of poor man Lonzo Ball, and that's what Josh Giddey is. He's not the defender Lonzo Ball is, and he's obviously not the corner three specialist that Lonzo Ball has become, but there is still a lot of promise in what he does, high IQ, sees the floor really well. I think he was their second leading rebounder, so positionally, he does give you size at the point guard spot to go and get rebounds and do things. So there is, I'm not totally just crapping on Josh Giddey, but just on the surface, if you're looking at it as a Bulls fan and saying, what did we get from this trade? Well, what you got is a year to step back and ensure yourself of keeping that 25 draft pick. That's how you have to think about it if you want to be logical in this.
Well, you talked about the culture impact of Alex Caruso, and I think that's everyone knows league-wide. Every GM in the league and coach wants Alex Caruso, but then there's this kind of dark cloud that comes with Josh Giddey with the investigation that he's been cleared of any wrongdoing with the underage girl, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
How does that, I mean, you got a good coaching staff in place, a veteran coaching staff, and you know Billy Donovan was a part of this trade. How does that look in terms of what you're selling? You're talking about taking the step back and the message, but you're also giving up maybe the culture guy in Caruso for a guy that comes with some baggage and Giddey.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, we're in a forgiving culture, especially right. When the league investigated this so intensely. I mean, sure. the league did, the team did. I mean, this was looked at by many mirrors, and this was not just – you know, he said, she said. They really, really looked into this thing to make sure that, especially in, you know, Oklahoma City, people have to understand, you know, before their games, they say a prayer. I mean, that's what they do. There's the prayer and then the national anthem. So it's a different culture there. So it was looked at very closely. And, you know, I think that's kind of, you know, there might be some people that still hold on to that and stuff, but I think, you know, league-wide, I think that's kind of been, you know, passed along. And like I said, this on the surface, you just can't look at it as an A for a B. There's more going on here, and I think they are building the team knowing that there is more going on here or rebuilding the team and knowing that this is just kind of the first domino. You know, I just talked to someone about an hour ago, and they're pretty excited with the LaVine trade market compared to where they were at the end of the season, just because some teams are now starting through back channels to understand that they will not be involved in the coveted free agents, whether it's Klay Thompson or Paul George, and the writing's on the wall for a couple of these organizations that those guys aren't going to go there. So the only way they can get a two-time All-Star there is through a trade. And so Zach LaVine's value on the trade market might be a little better, which to me was almost zero, than expected. That doesn't mean expect anything. You're still getting pennies back,
right,
for a dime, but that's okay. Like I said, this is done with intent. They feel pretty good about what they can get at 11 in next week in the draft, and they feel really good about making sure they hold on to that 25 draft pick and seeing where they fall once the lottery hits.
There's more specifics to talk about with Joe Cowley from the Sun-Times. You're listening to Parkins and Spiegel on the Score, but let's zoom out and expound on what you just said. They've turned down the opportunity to unload Zach or Vooch or DeMar at multiple trade deadlines and now for multiple off seasons. And it has been enraging to watch them try and squeeze their way into the playoffs and get themselves a round or two, perhaps. They have failed 2 years in a row. They tried, clearly, to make the playoffs and failed 2 years in a row. But now they're done, and this is the pivot. This appears to be the big pivot that a lot of us have been expecting or demanding during those deadlines and off seasons. This appears to be the pivot, finally.
Yeah, and the problem is their assets have all dropped in value now. So if they would have done it when their assets were at their highest value or before they reinvested in those assets, they would have been in a lot better position to make this pivot, where you're not having to take steps back because you unloaded your 25 draft pick, or you're not having this big boulder of the Zach LaVine max contract if you would have realized, you know, one-dimensional two-guard doesn't work and maxing that guy doesn't work, so let's trade him at his highest value after the Team USA, after he came back from that and before he went into the max contract year. So, that's the frustration that I think the media and the fan base has, is it's always been too late on every one of these players. I will say the Caruso one, you know, they could have gotten first and second-round picks for the 24 draft class. If they would have traded Caruso at the deadline, that's not what they wanted, and that's what a lot of teams are willing to give up for a reason, because the 24 draft class is full of landmines. And you could hit at 15 or 18, and that might be the best player in the draft class. And that's why it's a frustrating class, because you have to look at a lot of Euro tape, and you have to look at a lot of college one-and-dones of guys that were overcoached and in overcoached systems, and you have to hope you hit on a guy. So, you know, number one is no different than 18. So a bunch of teams throwing that around for Alex Caruso at the trade deadline, I get why they held off on that one. It just doesn't make sense. So, but yes, they've held on to way too many players for way too long and watched their value all come crashing down.
What does this trade say about the future of DeMar DeRozan with the Bulls? I know there's been both sides have said, like, we love each other and we see a fit, but, you know, does DeMar at this point in his career want to play for a team that's taken a step back?
I think it definitely reconfigures his mindset, because if you look at the way he would talk about Alex Caruso the last month of the season, smartest player I've ever played with, biggest heart I've ever played with, and you're 35 years old and that's now been taken from you, you really have to rethink. I want to come back there to play babysitter. Am I going back there for the payday of playing babysitter, or do I want to now try, while I'm still playing at a very high level and in great shape and led the league in minutes, do I now want to go for a ring? The very thing that I always stayed away from chasing and had problems with guys that were chasing it and guys that took loyalty and threw it out the window, do I now follow suit? And I wouldn't blame him one bit. I mean, when you change the pieces on the chessboard, you can't expect him to sit back down and play that same game. You know, I mean, it's different now. And so I definitely think this will have him rethink his mindset and the idea of, yeah, I'd be willing to do this deal, a 2 year with an option, or do I want to go and actually try doing something bigger for my legacy?
Man, he's been so honorable every step of the way. Yeah.
He is, isn't he?
He really is. He really is. He's impressive. He's honorable. And he has been willing to be that OG and age gracefully for a decent team and get his points, and pad the career stats, but also be trying to win.
And take Patrick Williams over on his shoulders, 100%. On his back, and take him to L.A. 100%. And train with him.
And, I mean, not just him. I mean, you know, going down to Illinois to watch Io get his jersey and the way he's dealt with Io and Kobe and having all those guys come out to Los Angeles and train with him and go through his hell week. Dalen Terry, you know, he used to joke around and say that's his stepson. And, I haven't been around a true, and you said it best, OG vet that actually cares about the players he's leaving behind and passing the torch gracefully and not doing it out of jealousy. And look, the bottom line is, last shot, he still feels like he's the cat that should have that, and the numbers say he's the cat that should have that. But he tried. He tried giving it to Zach 2 years ago.
Yes.
It just wasn't working. It's not Zach's DNA. And and you saw him at the end of the year giving it to Kobe and letting Kobe be that finisher. So he wants guys to succeed, even if it costs him end-of-the-game heroics, because he's not about that. But when he feels like he has to do it or that guy doesn't want it, he's going to take it. So, I haven't been around. You know, this would be year 13 or 14. I have not been around a guy on a daily basis like that. And I would probably have to say, even going back to White Sox days, a locker room guy, maybe Jim Thome, is a guy that actually really cared about everyone else's success and helping guys and talking to guys about things. I mean, shoot, my first year, Albert Bell was hiding his note cards on all the players in his locker. And if anyone went near it, including his teammates, he'd break their hands. So, dudes are really self. They say that they're not selfish, but a lot of athletes are really selfish as far as sharing knowledge and actually wanting guys to succeed. And DeMar's, he's something.
Man, I love that. I love the cross sport comp, of course, because it's the same kind of character we're talking about. Now I find myself hoping for DeMar to like sit down, look at the options, find that team that needs him as their third scorer or sixth man if he's willing. And my goodness, that dude would be an unbelievable fit for a lot of contenders. Joe, so how far is this going to go? You think this means a match for Patrick Williams eventually? Like, if there is a Zach trade and there is a DeMar exit, which all seems entirely possible, what are the other pieces that would make sense to stay?
I think the most sure thing right now is Patrick Williams. I don't think they want to give up on him yet. I think they saw enough from him last year. And also you have the specter of what Kobe White did in that, you know, when everyone was about to kind of give up on him and they said, no, let's, you know, we know he's a worker. You know, Patrick Williams is a worker. And he wants to succeed. I just don't, he's not wired like Kobe White. But they're both workers. They're both first guy in, last guy out type mentality. He doesn't have the aggressiveness during game that Kobe White does. So I'm not saying they're the same guy, and so you follow that same path. But what I'm saying is that was Arturas' first draft pick, and there would have to be something financially that would really make them go haywire to say, no, we're this team, we did not expect the market to be set on P. Will at this price, and we're not going to match it. I think they're going to match almost everything because they don't want to give up on this cat yet. And they feel like he showed enough in the first half as far as defensively and his continued 3-point shooting where he is a threat and a player that you keep, a key piece you keep on the roster. He's not a core player, but he's a very nice supplemental piece that you have to keep and ride out to see if he does physically mature and mentally mature. So I think he's the for sure one that, like I said, unless some team comes from nowhere, which I don't foresee because of his injury history, I think he's the for sure. They're going to ride with him and on one more contract and see what he can give them.
Hey, man, we just watched the Celtics win a title with, what, 7 of their top 8 are legit two-way players, you know? It's genuine dudes who can do everything. All right, last thing for you. Billy Donovan's willingness and appetite for what might be 1 year or 2 years down, if that's what they do.
Because he has such a relationship with the front office and has a say in personnel, I think he's fine with it. If it's dudes that he feels like, yeah, I want to coach that guy. And I don't care if he's 21 and he took a dip in his career and he has some baggage. You know, I want to coach that guy. There's things I like about his game. And so, I think because of how they listen to Billy and like they didn't in OKC where you're just the coach and just coach, I think it's different. He didn't want to do a rebuild with no say. I think he's okay with taking a step back with some say of guys that personally he would like to coach or feels like fit into what he wants to do. So I think it's a different animal. When I know people are bringing up the quote from OKC and the idea that the two separated because he didn't want to be part of a rebuild.
Right.
He didn't want to be part of that rebuild under those circumstances. So it's a little different.
Joe, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm going to choose to look at the positivity of the pivot. You know, it's again, might be ugly, might be a little bumpy, but it was time. Thanks, man. Have a great day.
It's all about Cooper Flag at this point.
Joe Cowley. See you, man. Joe Cowley from the Chicago Sun-Times. Cooper Flag, the big-time prospect at the top of the 2025 draft. Yay! Go, man. Blackhawks.
We root hard for the number one picks here.
Oh, dude, we're the best. Yeah. We're among the best that there ever was.
So sick of lotteries.
All right, let me bookmark Tankathon one more time. Let me go ahead and do that. He's Ryan McGuffey. I'm Matt Spiegel. It's Parker and Spiegel on 670 The Score. There has been a debate raging among baseball humans, and I have not had this debate with Ryan McGuffey. I love talking baseball with you. Let's do it in regards to the greatest that just left us. We'll do that next before we get out of here. Oh, and I got candy stuff I got to go over with you before we get out of here at the top of the hour. Mark Rohde's after us. Keep listening to 670 The Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
And now you're listening to Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Ron, just reading all kinds of things today about the late Willie Mays, who passed away yesterday, and thinking about, I think the phrase that Tim Kirchin put in his article was, he said he might have been the greatest combination of power, speed, and defense that the game has ever seen.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting the way he put it. And it certainly was Mays. But then I started thinking about all the other center fielders that I've seen. I never saw Duke Snider live.
He was the other one I was going to ask you about that people talk about.
But let's see, Joe DiMaggio. People rave about how great he was defensively.
Pump that into my veins. Dude, Pat and Ron went on that inning, just like weaving it in and around the play-by-play, talking about the great center fielders that they'd ever seen, the great defensive center fielders. I got a Devon White mention. I got an Andrew Jones mention. I mean, all of it. Because the image of Willie Mays playing baseball is so locked into your head. I mean, just all the broadcasts around MLB have been just kind of just swimming in Willie Mays stories for the past couple of days. It's been great.
I mean, what kid playing the game growing up didn't try to emulate? I played center field. So do you know how many times I tried to do the Willie Mays catch? I mean, I pulled it off in a meaningless, teen Little League game once, and the coach kind of pulled me aside and thought I was showboating.
It's the basket catch, but it's the glove upside down at midsection.
It's like the one where you're running.
Yep.
And he thought I was showboating, but I was like, I've always wanted to try to do the Willie Mays thing.
Pete Crow McGuffey, yeah. Right here. A little mustard on that hot dog.
Don't try to run on me if you're running around second. Like if you go second, round third, look out. I mean. Dude, Willie Mays, this is why that's why the Rick Wood game tonight, and it's coming back to how we started the show. I mean, it's kind of death is never beautiful. It sounds kind of weird, but I think there's some beauty in it tonight. I do. I think there's some beauty that Willie Mays passed this week.
There's some
this,
elegance in
there,
that.
There is. Like, I can find that beautiful. I can find a 93-year-old man living a long, like, fantastic life. Obviously, maybe Mr. Baseball, loved by everyone. That there's that tonight's a tribute to his life. Like, yeah. I kind of like, it was already a tribute to his life, and the fact that he passed this way, it would have been a shame if he had passed tomorrow. You know, like, and that Rick Wood was like a missed, like they missed that, and I kind of find some beauty in sadness sometimes.
I understand. I'm right there with you. I understand what you're saying, and we will not pull that headline that says McGuffey thinks it's beautiful that Willie Mays died.
Right. I'm sure someone already has.
No, we're not going to do that. No, I completely identify with what you're saying. Willie was always called the greatest living ball player. Yeah. I've been in multiple text threads over the past couple of days with people saying, who's the greatest living ball player? And it's not an easy answer. It was an easy answer. Since Joe DiMaggio died, it has been Willie Mays. And Joe Posnanski wrote about it today in his email newsletter. And it was, I learned so many interesting things that in 1969, there was some big, award ceremony where they crowned the greatest team of all time and the greatest living team of all time. And Joe DiMaggio was awarded the title of greatest living ball player in 1969. Okay. He then, and this part I knew, he demanded that he be referred to as the greatest living ball player in every public appearance he ever made following that. Like at Yankee Stadium for old timers games, whatever. It was in the contract. Joe DiMaggio, the greatest living ball player. Okay.
Can't spell Joe DiMaggio without ego, huh? I mean, you really can't.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. Now, Willie Mays, when he was a kid, loved Joe DiMaggio. Willie Mays said that he patterned his game in center field after Joe DiMaggio. He said Ted Williams was a better hitter, but he wanted to be Joe DiMaggio, which is pretty cool. I didn't know that. But when Joe D dies, Willie Mays becomes the de facto, and nobody disagreed, greatest living ball player. Okay. And that phrase, because of who Willie is, and I think also because of the way that Joe played, has always carried more than just skills and numbers with it. Greatest living ball player means somebody who inspires awe, somebody who is sort of mythic in like the five-tool overall nature of the game and plays in a beautiful way. And Posnanski's point was that phrase has always been about a guy who other Hall of Famers admitted was the dude. That's just the dude. You know, it's like even among themselves, they'd be like, well, let me go get Willie Mays' autograph.
Right.
Let me go talk to him. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm here, but have you seen Willie? You know, that kind of thing. So now it's not an easy answer.
I think it's, I don't, it's pretty, I don't, I keep thinking impossible is the word.
Well,
It comes with argument.
Well, see, here's the thing. The numbers and the skill set also says Barry Bonds.
100%.
It says that it Barry Bonds, but it can't be Barry Bonds. How many people are comfortable saying it? How many people are going to be comfortable even having the designation on Barry when that does not come with awe and wonder and appreciation and any sort of, you know, mythic quality.
It's funny you use the word mythic because I was going to say, do you feel like there's that mythic figure when he's in the Hall of Fame where the players themselves are going, hang on, Willie's here.
Right.
I mean, we get to...
He's not even in the Hall of Fame, and a lot of Hall of Famers don't want him in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. So he can't be... That can't be the passing
he's
of
not
the torch.
He's not going to be there in the room when you're saying, guys, the greatest living ball player. He's not even going to be there.
And half of them are going to be like, this guy was a, you know, a blank to me because of X, Y, and Z. And I know... I've talked to some former players about Barry Bonds, and they're like, oh, worst dude ever. Like, and... I don't know Barry Bonds. I was at the Barry Bonds press conference in 2005 where he was like, names, when the steroid press conference was happening.
Yeah.
And just watching him there seemed surreal because I'm like, this guy is delusional.
Right.
Like he's got, it's him versus the world and he likes it.
So greatest living ball player is not just wins above replacement total. It's not just all times numbers. Willie had all that in a bag of chips, but I think you got to have the whole package for the conversation, and I'm comfortable with that. So, you know, Mike Schmidt gets mentioned.
Schmidt.
Johnny Bench gets mentioned. Ricky Henderson gets mentioned.
Interesting. Ricky likes that Ricky's mentioned.
Okay, but talk about a mythology and the skill set and the reverence. And so there's a lot of guys. Poznanski landed on Ken Griffey Jr.
Okay, so that's my pick. Did I just blow it for you guys?
Both of ours. We were all gonna give a name like we talked about in the show, and you blew Ryan's too.
Did you have Junior?
Naming them.
What's that? Junior also.
I have Junior's.
Right. And I had Ricky Henderson. I had a whole case for Ricky Henderson.
All right, let me hear it.
No, I'm not doing it anymore.
Why not?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, why would we do that when we're not gonna read Joe Poznanski talk about?
Yeah, I didn't read Joe's article. Did Joe Sheehan write anything that we should read about it?
It sounds like Joe named like 14 players.
Yeah, just
like,
pick a lane.
Yeah.
So we don't need to read Joe to tell Ryan and myself that Ken Griffey Jr. helped usher baseball out of like the hardo 80s era into the cool 90s era with the upper deck card, the backwards cap.
Every kid.
The smile. We all wanted to be like him.
I wanted to be lefty so bad only because of Ken Griffey Jr.
And talk about wearing that. The whole aura, the stigma.
Kenny, you don't have to, dude.
Yes, he does. I blew it. Okay, Shane, look, I'm not a perfect broadcaster.
I'm putting my head on backwards.
I'm not a perfect broadcaster, okay?
I'm putting my head on backwards.
You know, sometimes I felt so good about the way I set it up and talking about it. I felt great about it. And then I just...
I'm over it.
You don't seem over it.
Yeah, I'm over it.
Tanny, keep going. You were rolling.
Yeah, not really. But my point is... I only got a chance to cover one Super Bowl here with the station, you know, Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco. I tell the story all the time. You know, the room is filled with celebrities at Radio Row, but one guy walks in the room and everyone's heads turn. Athletes, actors, media people. Ken Griffey Jr., when he walks in the room, everyone's like, ooh, I need a selfie with that guy. I need to just be in his essence. You know, and that guy is just the perfect guy to wear this mantle of greatest living ball player because he's a great ambassador to the game, going to be a hitting coach for Team USA, you know, when he didn't have to do stuff like that. You know, it's just I think he is a perfect guy. Bonds was a better player, I think, all around, like, you know, before he took the stuff, allegedly, you know, and I remember, I'm old enough to remember early Barry Bonds. So I don't have the same relationship as like a lot of people in media have with Bonds, where they just like hate him, don't want to talk about him, because I get why he may have did the things that he did, because he was the best player. And then he saw these guys who weren't as good as him try to get that edge, that next, you know, all the money, the accolades, fame, all that. So I get it. But Ken Griffey Jr. is like what Bonds would have been if he didn't do things to help him out and to stay on the field and stuff like that. So
agreed. Like, I remember Bonds in Pittsburgh thinking, man, I wish the White Sox had a guy like that. And I love, like, I think Frank's the best right-handed hitter I've ever seen. And hopefully that stands true. But when we're talking about, I was going to build a case for Albert Pujols, but then I'm like, I just couldn't to be, there's a big myth there. From Willie Mays to Albert Pujols.
I don't think he can be a first baseman. I mean, as a defensive first baseman, I don't think it can be.
It's incredibly hard.
It's true. All due respect to Mike Schmidt, I don't know if it can be a third baseman. There's something about the grace of an outfielder and the control of all that space that matters.
There's one thing to think about with Barry Bonds that I think kind of, and Ricky Henderson was my choice, but if you take away, and this is going around on Twitter a lot the last few days, if you take away all the stats from his 7 MVP seasons, Barry Bonds still has 440 homers and 359 stolen bases, which no other player in baseball has. If you take away all the stats from all 7 MVP seasons.
No way, really? That's
440
crazy.
Homers, 359 stolen bases. No one else has ever done that.
The number, it's Bonds unassailable with the numbers. And oh, by the way, he was great on defense and he was great as a runner. He was great with all of it.
It can't be Bonds.
But it can't be Bonds.
If you take away all the homers from the steroid allegation years, he still has over 600.
They're not parading. The stats don't lie. He's fourth all time. Like, he's a top 5 WAR player of all time. I mean, it's the easy answer had he not been what he was.
Tell me why Ricky, because I give Ricky a lot of thought.
I mean, so over 1,400 stolen bases, no one else even has 1,000. Played for 25 years.
Yeah.
I mean, 111, 112 career WAR. That's 30 more than Ken Griffey Jr. Played for longer, but, I mean, Ricky was transcendental.
He could do absolutely everything.
And there won't be another? Like, no, no one never. Will ever come close to those.
No leadoff man.
No leadoff man will ever hit homers like he did in the leadoff position. No one will ever talk in the third person like Ricky did.
Yeah. You know, and the fact that he knew he was great, but he was never, like, malicious about it. It was an ego that was not malicious. It was kind of lovable.
Ricky's not bad. I mean, I like Griffey because there's too much. Like, he wore 24. Willie wore 24.
Mm-hmm.
Both center fielders. Defined an era. I mean, what Tanny was saying about what he did to take baseball at that time when it was bottomed out. You know, I'm still pissed about 1994. You know, I don't think I'll ever get over that because of how old I was at that particular point as a White Sox fan where Frank Thomas, they had such, they had the best hitter in the game, and I'm still thinking about what
brutal.
It might have been.
Absolutely brutal.
But Ken Griffey Jr. was the face of baseball coming out of that. And obviously 1998 helped. The McGuire-Sosa home run chase brought it to the top again. But having that distinction of being, he was the kid. He was his, you know, it's Ken Griffey Sr.'s kid. He's the number one pick. He's on every card. He was Bryce Harper before Bryce Harper. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yep.
He had to live with that when that was the only thing that mattered.
I think it's Griffey, and I think you guys are right. And I think that Ricky deserves mention. And, you know, texters want to say Pete Rose. Pete Rose did not have enough power, and that has to be part of it because that's one of the five tools. Could be. And I also want to say one more thing.
Also, if you pay Pete Rose enough, he will put that on a baseball. So I love
this.
For
is
that.
An interesting Ichiro is an interesting one.
Ichiro is like,
that's
an interesting.
That's
one.
A good. That's a good name.
What I mean, talk about elegance and grace and
giving
genius.
Back to the game. I mean, that guy's all over Seattle. He's out in the outfield all the time. That's is he the greatest? I like that one.
Ichiro Suzuki.
Yeah,
you're talking about the same one.
Yep. Yeah, Ichiro Johnson also pretty good. But not, and Ichiro Goldstein.
I mean, the way baseball is using Ken. I mean, you talked about Tanny about how his Team USA's hitting coach. They used him last year in the field of, or what, 2 years ago in the Field of Dreams game.
Yeah.
We talked about the father son moment like they've had. Like
it has all that mythic nature.
He's trying to help us get rid of our dad bods also on social media. He's got that going. You know,
yes,
granted he's no Big Hurt in that department, but you know,
and he's also had Doug Glanville on a couple of weeks ago on Hit and Run. He said that he's noticed a Griffey becoming more active with his legacy and like more active with like black baseball and everything. So kind of embracing this next chapter. So,
and he threw out he had a big outfield assist in the blackout
throw.
Case. There
true.
It is. So it has
he
to
was
be.
A White Sox and he avoided scandal. Look, so that alone.
Two things. One is that we got to come back and talk about the candy bar, how I'm eating it. And I wonder if you are. And two, I don't think I entirely ruined the segment. We'll let the guys decide next on 670 The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
It's been a long 4 hours.
Afternoons on The Score.
If you want to throw some candies out there and I give you the instant reaction on what there are, that's my service.
Milk Duds.
That's a solid movie candy.
Snickers bar.
Elite.
We like talking candy from time to time. One day, Ryan McGuffey and I were in, and it was we were talking about a Twix bar, and I was telling him how I like to eat the Twix bar, biting the caramel off the top, then eating the chocolate off the sides, and then revealing a pretty clean shortbread cookie. And it was like that scene in Step Brothers.
Oh, it was.
Right?
I remember that. I to this day, it's burned into my brain, the look we gave each other. It was similar to the one you gave your buddy at the planetarium the other day.
Oh. That's right.
You know,
that's
it was right. Just, it was like, holy hell, I actually didn't want to say this because I didn't know anyone else did it. And then you found out we're in a fraternity of people who love it.
So yesterday I'm at Manny's over there on Jefferson, and they sell a bunch of cool old, or not old, but like odd candy bars or candy bars you don't necessarily usually see or whatever.
Well, Charleston Chew.
Oh, not a big marshmallow guy.
Charleston Chew in the freezer, baby.
Oh.
We got
how many fillings? How many fillings does that rip
we
out?
We ruined his segment.
Wait, you just ruined my segment.
Hell yeah, brother.
Is that it?
Hell yeah, brother.
Oh, my God.
Love to hear that. A win for the boys.
Did you know it?
No idea.
Did you know it?
Oh, I thought it was like Nestle Crunch. That
my official guess was going to be Seinfeld reference, Snickers bar with a knife and fork.
Oh,
that was
going to
be my guess.
No, because I, for those who didn't hear it, and I didn't even hear the setup this time.
Don't worry, it's 52.
I said that there was another candy bar.
Yeah.
And a particular way of eating it that I had done yesterday and taught to my son, who was blown away, and I wondered if you ate it the same way. And so the boys just guessed. Charleston Chew in the freezer. Charleston Chew in the freezer, so it like crackles and falls apart when you take a bite.
Even better, the minis that come in the box. The Charleston Chew minis, put that in the freezer, and then you're just like taking little handfuls of Charleston Chews.
All right, so I can go now, right? Like the two of you are going to talk about this? You're in love?
Yeah.
The three of us. It's more of a threesome.
Yeah, Ryan, did you ever want to, you know, have an urge for a Charleston Chew? Maybe, I don't know if you were a comic book reader as a kid, as I was. I was like, ooh, Charleston Chew looks pretty good. Then you go to the store and buy one. You're like, ooh, this is horrendous.
It has marshmallow in it, right?
It's nougat. Mm-hmm. It's described as nougat, but it is white and seems like marshmallow. Yeah. Not a fan?
They say about me.
I have very few like dislikes. Like I like to have a s'mores. I'm kind of like it's not a s'more because I don't like the marshmallow as much.
Yeah, that's not a s'more.
I know. You know what it is? It's a toasted, I toast the graham cracker.
Yeah.
And
Do you really?
I melt the chocolate and everyone's always like, oh, let me try that. I'm like, exactly.
God, Our relationship took a step back.
It did. Yeah. The Charleston Chew part of it really threw me off. I thought it was going to be like Nestle Crunch or something, but.
What would be interesting? How to eat a Nestle Crunch?
Or a Hershey bar. You know, do you break it apart in each segment?
I thought you were going to go Kit Kat and like, do you take a bite of the Kit Kat or do you break the pieces off of the Kit Kat?
Yeah, that's
I'll
tell you what I do
one.
With the Kit Kat from time to time. I'll take off the one stick at a time and then eat from the top down, layer-wise.
That's weird.
I don't get that.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I don't get that romantic with my Kit Kat, but I definitely do the one-by-one because I'm all about, like, I want to make it last, you know?
Yeah. I understand. Well, that stuff, it's not even prescription anymore. You can just get it over the counter.
You
can
do a little foreplay with your Kit Kat bar.
Oh, yeah. That's how foreplay started for me. No. My foreplay was always a Twix bar, and it's forever and always
okay.
with Matt Spiegel.
Well, good job. So I ruined two segments ago, and then you guys ruined this one. You got me back.
I say we enhanced
strong
it,
out.
Kenny.
It was just strong out.
I think we enhanced it.
Because I disappointed the Charleston Chew conversation.
Well, yeah, you did. You did. I don't even know you anymore. Never asked to work with you again.
Check.
He is Ryan McGuffey. Thanks, man. A pleasure.
I always love doing it with you. You know that.
Thanks, brother. And he means the radio show. Thank you to Chris Tannehill for the sound guy. He makes us for the sound guy. He makes us sound
I brought my own today.
Yeah. He could cut a hole open with me, I think, at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful that Willie Mays died.
Thanks to Shane Reardon for the phone guy. But he's more than that, people. He's more than that. Thank you to the guests on our show. Joe Cowley was on the show. And then get this. Bobby Jenks and Jonathan Papelbon were on the show. Yeah, that's right. Rewind on the Odyssey app. And check them out because they were really good. Thank you to Kevin Lapka. Thank you to Connor O'Donnell. Thank you to everybody who helped. And thank you all for listening and for texting and for being a part of the show and calling and tweeting and doing everything that you do. Mark Grody is next coming up on 670 The Score.
That's it. All right, guys. Didn't mean to bother you.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.